Hey everybody, Dr. Wenzel here. Real quick, this episode is going to be a recording of a health and wellness talk I gave in Nashville, Tennessee several months ago in front of several hundred very successful business owners and movers and shakers, all about medicine 3.0, state of the union, where are we at, where have we come from, where are we going, and maybe more importantly, to me personally, it really dives into my belief systems about what is possible by virtue of investing in your health and taking an offensive mindset. 90 is the new 60, as anybody who's listened to this podcast knows. I firmly believe that adding decades of vibrant living to the back end of life is possible and worth pursuing for all who are listening. I hope you enjoy this as much as I have enjoyed learning how it's impacting people and the conversations that it's starting with them and their physicians. I really hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the Future of Medicine podcast, where we believe that feeling great and living a long time is possible and that your healthcare should help you get there. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Wenzel. My hope is simple, that this show will help you along your journey to becoming the healthiest, strongest, and most powerful version of you possible. Now, let's jump into the show.
My name's Aaron Wenzel. It's a privilege to stand in front of a bunch of really smart, successful people. I'm the least likely doctor all time. Took the road less traveled, but here I am. I care deeply about what I do, how I do it, and who I do it with. I founded my practice just under 8 years ago, kind of because I had to, because I couldn't do medicine in a 2.0 kind of way. My language around this is sick care. I was trained, Leah was trained in a sick care model. The entire system from top to bottom, in and out, is designed to keep you sick but don't die, essentially. I don't think that was the intent, but it is what we have. Every system, process, treatment, follow-up, procedure is all in effort to manage disease. Preventing, delaying chronic disease is an awful business model. I like to think about me and my team as health asset managers. I think that we have the privilege of managing the most important asset ever, and that is your health. We've been told our whole life that time was the most important thing, and while I do agree time is very, very important, nothing is more important than your health. I would debate that time without health isn't all that valuable. You could have some pretty interesting conversations with people who are on the back end of life and really suffering. I think time without health is a missed opportunity. In order to be a health asset manager, we essentially do what your wealth asset managers do. We try to maximize opportunity based on your unique situation, family history, goals, environment, resources, while managing your risk. Well, what is the risk of living a long time and living well? Primarily, it's what kills humans. And so we just reverse engineer what we know to be true, and that is unless you have a primary strategy of de-risking your future for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and cancer, you have a very low likelihood of having a long, vibrant life. All the other tactics, tricks, tips, biohacking, they're all interesting, and they have their place, but they are absolutely secondary and tertiary issues if you're, again, assuming, if you have no interest in living a long time or feeling really good, just ignore everything I'm saying. I really believe 90 is the new 60. That's something I've been talking about in my world with my members for a long, long time. I think for most people, it is an achievable goal to add 2 or 3 decades of life at a very high level. And even if you come up 5-10 years short, you still win. So I believe that very, very deeply. I want to give you some basic framework, and I want to be respectful of people's time, and I understand that you all probably have about 17 questions each, and going right to the Q&A is probably going to be the most useful for you individually. I don't do population-based health. I don't do sick care. I do health care. I do health of one-on-one, and the answer oftentimes, just to let you know, will be it depends. So just to kind of let the cat out of the bag, which is why I think Q&A will be really useful. Basic framework, if you want to live a long time and feel really good, step number one is not obvious. You have to believe it's possible. If you don't have a deep belief that it is a possibility, you will never begin the journey. Step number two is you have to believe that it's worth it. Believing that it's possible is not enough if you don't think the prize is worth it in the end. You will not do what it takes, the time, the energy, the effort, the resources, the attention, the economics. You will not do it. Number three, and this might catch some of you by surprise, but my philosophy is never retire in the classic sense. Don't work hard so that one day, maybe if you're lucky, you'll get a chance to do nothing. That's a death sentence. Latest data tell us that 50% mortality in the first 12 months of retirement. When you send your mind to pasture, your body will follow, and the science proves that. Find something that you're passionate about. Find something that gives you big, 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 big purpose. You have to have, as a human, a compelling future, or you will not pursue the things, and you will not engage and invest in the things to make that compelling future real. Number four, you have to be a self-advocate. You have to be the one pounding your own drum the loudest. It's a must. If you're relying on a sick care model to point guard you to some fantasy outcome, it's delusional at best. Number five, you have to find your team. Leah talked about it. I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's me. I don't care if it's Leah. I don't care if it's a person down the street. You have to find your person. How do you know who your person is? You have to have somebody who has the same goals, the same value systems, or there will be conflict and friction from the very beginning. I cannot stress the importance of finding the right team. Number six, stop smoking immediately. Number one preventable cause of death on the planet is smoking. Just stop. Or nothing else I say matters. It's high risk poker if you're smoking. Number seven, prioritize the delay of chronic disease, primarily metabolic disease. I have a saying in my practice. My sayings are usually called Wenzelisms, so they tend to be a little ranty, but insulin is the devil. The body's only biochemical way to manage blood sugar is through insulin. The more that your blood sugar is elevated, which is why glucose monitoring is important, the more time in residence insulin is present, the more insulin is present, the more your body will resist it. The more it resists it, the higher your blood sugar goes. It's a vicious cycle, and it's fueling the flames of Alzheimer's, heart disease, and cancer. It is the health epidemic. It is the number one health crisis on the planet. No disease will outpace diabetes in the next 20 years. Not one. Okay. Number eight, almost done. Diagnose and identify killers of humans early. Speed is the game. Medicine 2.0 is only useful when you're having an actual heart attack. Best heart hospital on the planet, and it's not even close, is Cleveland Clinic. If you showed up to Cleveland Clinic and said, I want to make sure I'm doing everything I can to prevent heart disease and a heart attack in my future, they'll say, are you having chest pain? Nope. Have you ever had a heart attack? Nope. We can't do anything for you. Come back when you have a heart attack. Right? We now have tools that are game-changing and revolutionary. I'm happy to talk more in depth in Q&A. There are fancy CAT scans that you can take that these digital images can be uploaded in the cloud, and it's called Clearly. You should probably write that down. It's the most important cardiovascular diagnostic test that you could get if you're over the age, certainly over the age of 50, getting a baseline. It will tell you, do you have heart atherosclerosis, how much, where, and what, and probably most importantly, what is the composition of that plaque? It is the most important thing to know because it is the most important killer of humans. And that's how we think. Other early diagnostic tests that I think you should write down, something called Galleri by Grail. This is a singular blood test. Your insurance will not pay for it. It's somewhere between $800 and $1,000. It tests you for about 50 of the top cancers on the planet. Did you know that of the top 50 cancer killers, which is the number two killer of humans, we have 5 routine screening tests? 2, 3, 4, 5. Breast, prostate, cervical, skin. What am I missing? Colon. Nothing for pancreas, nothing for lung, nothing for kidney, nothing for liver, nothing for lymphoma, leukemia. You get diagnosed when you have symptoms, which by definition is late. This is where bad outcomes happen. No one dies in the history of cancer from a stage one cancer. By definition, it's localized. But you never know it's there until you have symptoms, which means it's late. Galleri in our practice has saved lives. Something you should consider. Plenty of other things. We can dive into those in the Q&A if you have interest. And then lastly, I would say identify and invest in and become maniacally obsessed about things that are health multipliers. One unit of energy or attention in, and you get some multiple, some nonlinear relationship between effort, energy, check writing, and the outcome. And in my experience, the number one thing is I'm not sure there's a bigger return on your effort, energy, and time than having a compelling future. I really believe that. Jim Collins calls it your big BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal. The second thing is you got to optimize your glucose level and your insulin sensitivity. I'm super bullish on a constant glucose monitor. If you haven't done that, it is wildly informative into your behaviors, your diet, and how it impacts the thing that matters the most, which is your glucose level. Number three, as we age, if living a long time and being strong and powerful is important, you will not do that without a robust lean muscle mass. All humans, as we age, lose lean mass. This is a complex biochemistry, physiology, and it involves hormones, strength training, sleep, recovery. It's very complex, but it matters a ton. Sleep. In this room, I could predict that sleep is universally the number one most elusive, regularly achieved outcome. It is very complex sleep physiology. Some people are masters and they can bottle it up and sell it, but those are aliens. Most successful entrepreneurs, business owners, leaders have a hard time turning off. American culture, we don't have boundaries. We work late when everyone's down. It's incredibly disruptive, and sleep is where the magic happens because you spend 1/3 at least of your life. Think about that. 1/3 of your time on this planet is sleeping. How can it not be the most important thing? Like, it just is. Sleep has always been important to me, but it's moved up to the tippy, tippy, tippy top. Number five, find a sustainable fitness plan and a dietary plan that work for you that you can stick to. The best diet is the one you can stick to. We're omnivores, we can eat anything. It's an omnivore dilemma. What do you eat when you can eat anything? And what do you eat when there's abundance all around you? It's very confusing, but it's not hard, actually. We can talk about that in Q&A. And then lastly, create a health plan that gives you regular optics on the things that are the most important. You need a dashboard. You need a dashboard to your health. You have a dashboard in your business. You have a dashboard in the other areas of your life. I would encourage you to think about areas of your life where you're crushing it. It's probably because you have eyes on the things that are most important. You're measuring it. You're innovating, you're investing, you're trimming, you're pruning. What you pay attention to will improve, and your health is no different. I look forward to jumping into some questions.
I'm not sure. I guess they're up on the side. Continuous glucose monitors. Recommendations? I mean, I see them everywhere now. And what's the best?
I just send the Freestyle 3. It's as thick as two pennies. And the worst feeling is when you hit the side of a doorway. Pretty easy to put on. A little complicated, get a YouTube video, but the Freestyle 3. The Dexcom is okay too, but Freestyle 3 is pretty easy. There's a coupon online that gives you the first 2 weeks free. I know you guys love that.
Hi, you talked about estrogen depletion. And so for men, testosterone, like, I'm gonna pretend I'm in your office for a consultation. Like, what are the pros and cons health-wise of like testosterone therapy, estrogen therapy? And looking at it from like a lens of either like you really need it or just like being the best person that you can be. So what age would you like, and I know you said it depends, but what age would you start that to be the best you can be? Like, what are the health trade-offs to doing it, not doing it? Interested in learning that.
I'm gonna try not to spaz out about all the questions and I'm gonna try not to hog the microphone. But remember what I said, 8 years before the menses stop, 8 years before you stop having a period, your hormones sputter. Blood tests look normal, but your body doesn't feel well. So a lot of hormone replacement is guided by how you feel. I'm gonna let you speak to testosterone, but the Menopause Society, the American Menopause Society, now recommends hormone replacement as first-line therapy for anxiety and depression in perimenopause. It is that important. But for me, again, it depends. It's case by case. So we look at your family history. Did your mom have an early breast cancer that was estrogen positive? So then the conversation shifts away from it's not beneficial for estrogen use in this person. But it's really a matter of how do you feel, what's going on, where are you in your life cycle, and what's what is your genetic makeup? And I'm gonna defer testosterone to you.
Big fan. For men and women, I think the answer is it depends, actually. The things that it would primarily depend on, obviously there are a handful of people that should not take hormone replacement therapy, and somebody well-trained will know what to look for in that and how to manage that. Most common question I get is testosterone therapy safe for men? Unequivocally, yes. It has never been shown to be a problem in any well-done study, not ever once. I've got copies of all the studies, a handful of studies that shows no benefit, no gain, and there's been a handful of really, really well-done studies showing benefit. It's out of the scope of this conversation, but in 1992, the first government-funded, double-blinded, randomized, controlled style on study on women's health ever not involving pregnancy was done. It's called the Women's Health Initiative. It changed everything for the worse. Again, that's a whole nother conversation. That combined with professional sports gives testosterone a bad rap. Hormones is a bad rap. They all get lumped in. They're dangerous. They're not safe. They're cheating. They're blah, blah, blah. It's unfortunate. There's a lot of suffering that's needless. I would say I have a handful of men under the age of 40 who are profoundly symptomatic and wildly deficient in testosterone. But like the bell curve distribution, most men at around 45, that's about the age where I was really starting to be symptomatic and my levels were very, very low. It was life-changing for me, as it is for lots of other men. There are some men who can live into their 50s and they're like part alien. They don't drop, they feel great. And to Leah's point, I think it's 50% your levels, 50% how you feel. I am not comforted by levels that look good and you feel terrible. And I am not comforted by, and I'm not encouraged by people who feel good that levels are low. Like it's a bilateral approach. That's what I would say.
You mentioned this test where you test for 50 different things. How does that affect someone's mental health? Because it feels like if you go looking for something, you're gonna find something, even if it turns out to be benign, and you tell someone and they get nervous, anxiety, and you're looking for a lot of stuff, you're probably gonna find something.
It's a sweaty palm test. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, and that needs to be discussed. This is where doctors who you have a relationship with that you trust become really, really valuable, where they're not watching the clock and they take the time to walk you through this. There is the economics that's the downside, and then there is, you're not testing for risk. This is yes or no. We find cancer signal or we don't. It's a sweaty palm test. And there's about a 1 in 200 chance of a false positive, which is traumatic. And you need to be aware of that. So 199 people get a positive test, and now they know they have cancer early. And one person got a yes, and it was a false positive. What we don't know yet, which the data is coming, is this a limitation, or is the test so George Jetson that it's picking up microscopic tumor cells before you can even see it by MRI? MRI only can see a tumor at about a half a millimeter. I might have some trained surgical friends in the room that can see them smaller than that, but us dumb family practice guys can't see that.
So that Galleri test, the liquid biopsy, is super sensitive, and it tends not to pick up so many false positives. The whole body diffusion-weighted imaging, the whole body MRI, that there's not one powerful enough in Nashville. I think you have to go to Chicago, Dallas. Okay, those are wrought with false positives, but it's a sweaty palm test, yes. But if there's cancer there, it's going to find you. So you find it or it finds you. And I'd rather go after something that turns out to be a cyst and have sweaty palms for 2 weeks than have missed it and had to leave my family.
So my body seems to have just realized that I'm about to turn 40, and so I've got all these new things popping up. And one of them, I mean, I had twins, and I didn't have heartburn once, but all of a sudden I had, like, raging heartburn. And so the more I talk to people about it, the more I find out it is a very common situation. What do you say to your patients when they're dealing with heartburn? I've heard so much about, oh, it's stress, or, oh, it's diet. What is your advice for that?
I feel terrible taking these, but this is my jam. Okay, so the lower esophageal sphincter, we are magnificently made. There's a gate at the bottom of your esophagus, and it coincides with the level of your diaphragm, and it's meant to hold the most powerful acid inside of your stomach, where really is the only place your body's designed to hold it. There's a few things that make that sphincter relax: coffee, chocolate, peppermint, and so just knowing those things. And there's a few things that help that sphincter contract: low dose melatonin, right? So first, could it be a structural thing? Are you doing something that's relaxing that sphincter? Mm. Number two, could you just by gravity, maybe by keeping yourself 30% elevated at night, mm-hmm. Could you help gravity reduce the amount of reflux? And then if there's a lot of adiposity in your midsection, you could be driving your diaphragm up. There's also structural hiatal hernias, but it's not an easy fix. There's nothing wrong with Tums. A little bit of baking soda, if you don't have high blood pressure, a tiny, tiny bit of baking soda in water, mm-hmm. The most potent base will quench the most potent acid. But look at your diet and see if maybe you're accidentally relaxing that sphincter. Thanks. I'm sorry to give medical advice.
I want to thank you so much for your attention. Listen, I don't take it for granted. It means the absolute world to me. You can find out more about today's episode at brentwoodmd.com/podcast. There you'll find the show notes, all the related links to this episode, and tons of other resources. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. And if you've already subscribed, then it would mean so much to me if you left a review. If you think we'd be a good fit to work together, or you would just simply like to know more about the concierge services that I provide my private clients, email us at membership@brentwoodmd.com. And now for the obligatory disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the giving of medical advice, as no doctor-patient relationship has been formed.
The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should seek the advice of their own medical professional providers.